Yosemite. Oh, the other day I was trying to explain to somebody why Black Lives Matter. Yeah, I know. I found myself yet again baffled at the fact that I needed to justify why that was. This college-educated person didn't seem to be having any of it, and I left the conversation just hanging. I just thought to myself, man, I'm so tired of having to do this. And then it hit me. I get to unplug from this conversation. The fatigue that people of color and most other systematically oppressed groups experience is not something that can be unplugged from. And while 2020 is squeezing the last drops of resilience from my cold, dead hands, I'd like to remind you that this conversation has been going on long before the year of the corona decided to come along. This is what the intersectionality of race and conservation looks like. This particular episode of Eyes on Conservation was originally published nearly 2 years ago on August 15th, 2018. It was produced by our very own Serena Simons and features her interview with Rue Mapp, CEO and founder of the nonprofit Outdoor Afro. Enjoy.
You're listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 160. Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast. I'm your host, Serena Simons, and I try to bring you engaging stories that meet at the intersection of social justice and the environment. And on today's episode of the show, I interview a woman who has inspired me and many people like me to embrace our diversity in outdoor spaces and find community, even when it's not always easy. Her name is Rue Mapp, and she is the CEO and founder of Outdoor Afro, a not-for-profit organization founded in Oakland, California. They are at the forefront of celebrating and inspiring African-American connections in nature, and Outdoor Afro represents a network across 30 states, challenging and changing representation in the outdoors and connecting thousands of people to outdoor experiences. I really hope you enjoy this episode of the show. Can you maybe just kind of introduce yourself and talk a bit about your background and kind of how you came to start the organization that we're going to be talking about, which is Outdoor Afro?
Yeah, Outdoor Afro was born out of a lifetime of experiences connecting to nature with my family, with my community, being involved with different clubs and organizations over the years, and also a love of technology. I was born and raised in Oakland, California, and, being comfortable using computer technology at a young age was, you know, something that we were just taking for granted pretty much as we're so close to Silicon Valley and influenced by tech culture. And then my family also had a ranch up in Northern California in Lake County where, you know, I was able to just really, I mean, not only just, you know, enjoy outdoor recreation, but to also understand the importance of getting away from urban centers and the impact that it had on other people. So we constantly convened people and entertained in that space. And it was really a wonderful incubation of community and nature that I was able to just make a part of my understanding of how to connect with the outdoors from a really young age. So as I grew up, I wanted to continue to pursue outdoor activities. And I found that the further out I got, I was usually the only one, the only African-American and only African-American female. And that, you know, put me in a lot of different awkward situations, quite frankly. And I had to challenge people's assumptions about, you know, my interests and abilities all the time. And it wasn't until 2009 when I was thinking about going to grad school that I had this aha moment when a mentor asked me a really important question. She said, you know, she asked me, she's like, if time and money were not an issue, what would you be doing? And I just opened my mouth and my life fell out. I said, I'd probably start a website to reconnect African Americans to the outdoors because I knew we had a connection, but it wasn't a connection that we were seeing in everyday representation. So starting with our blog, it was just a social media conversation when social media was really new and young and not everybody was on it. And there was a lot of concern in the environmental fields that being in front of a screen is going to be, you know, would compete with people actually going outside. And I think that that part of that is true. But what we were talking about with Outdoor Afro on social media was not about, you know, replacing the screen with nature, but using the screen as an embedded representation, an invitation to get outside by showing and showcasing Black people all over the country doing all kinds of things in nature. So that evolved to where we are today, where we're no longer just a blog. We are a national not-for-profit organization with about 80 people who we've trained to help connect people in their communities to the outdoors. And our network has got about 34,000 people in it, and we're in about 30 states. So from that conversation, from that moment of revelation, you know, we've evolved into, you know, what I do full time professionally, but also a movement in its own right. And it's just been really great to see how the conversation has continued to expand and reach more and more people through, you know, many, many other affinity organizations like Outdoor Afro.
Yeah, I think that the social media thing is so huge because so many people, especially young people, are using it these days. And something that I wish that I had when I was growing up, you know, as a biracial half Black woman, like I never saw representation of Black women in the outdoors, Black women doing all these things that I was interested in. You know, I was, I've always been interested in the outdoors, but I never had people to look up to or people that looked like me that were doing the things that I wanted to do. And, you know, if I had social media growing up, you know, when I was a kid, I think that would be so huge just to see, you know, other Black folks, other Black women doing all of these things and being represented in these spaces. And yeah, I just think that that is so amazing and important. And you didn't want to replace the screen and just kind of advocate to get away from social media, but you used it as a tool. And I think it's really evolved that way.
Yeah.
And it's so amazing.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it has evolved to places that I hadn't even, there's two stories here. One is the story of pursuing my dream and, you know, giving myself over to this cause and, you know, professionalizing it, so that I could sustain myself and live in the Bay Area and have, you know, social impact at the same time. And then there's the actual, getting the people out. And one of the things that has evolved in our work is that it's no more just about getting people outside. It's also about leadership and lifting up leadership, because what we, you know, see time and again is the model that has, I feel, harmed the conservation movement of that hoods to woods. Like, we're going to go and take the, you know, poor, low income, you know, Black and brown kids, you know, to a remote nature experience, and we'll all feel good about ourselves afterwards. But the reality is that Black people have always had a connection to nature. We do nature sometimes differently, because there have been historic constraints about where we actually could go, what we actually could do. I mean, we, for instance, have, you know, in not too distant past, the reality that we Black people couldn't go to public pools. And as a result, you know, we have this huge discrepancy in the number of Black people who actually can swim, which has resulted in, you know, a public health crisis, quite frankly, of high numbers of African Americans who drown each year because they don't know how to swim. And so, you know, so there are some real barriers that have existed. And there's also, you know, this notion of what leisure time looks like. Like, not everybody has, we don't all have the same capacities to get away from it all, mm-hmm. right? You may have a transportation barrier. You may have not been historically able to go to a particular place because of some of the constraints that I mentioned before, or it's just not what your family did. Mm-hmm. And what I find is that Black people do recreate in great numbers close to home. For when you look at the reality of the schedule of busy working families, you know, people have so much on their plate, especially on weekends. You're taking kids to practices, you're going to participate in other civic opportunities or church, or you're taking care of family members. And so there's not a lot of time on, you know, in the lives of busy working families to just take off. So that's one of the things that we set out to do with Outdoor Afro, is to really live inside of the real experience of Black people and help bring outdoor activities down to earth and totally make them accessible, mm-hmm. welcoming. And then what we hope to do is to help people in their own homes just to become those leaders again in the outdoors. Like mm-hmm. a lot of us got our, you know, our knowledge, our experiences through parents, grandparents. And so what we really hope to do is to help restore that outdoor leadership back to the home and to really help everyday folks find their leadership. And that it's going to look different depending on who you are, where you live, what you have access to. But to really kind of get this sense of outdoors is something other people do off of, you know, out of our consciousness, mm-hmm. and elevate the way that people are getting outside and celebrating how people are getting outside, so that we're not having this deficit based conversation.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in everything you just said. I want to start by just kind of diving into a little bit more heavily into the context of why Black folks historically feel excluded from outdoor recreation in the sense of like national parks, visiting national parks, and just going into the woods and experiencing, you know, camping or hiking or anything like that. And I think there's a nostalgia that's associated with, you know, something like camping or hiking. And I think it resonates with a lot of white folks, because it's just kind of like that's, you know, let's go back to a simpler time, that mentality. But for Black folks who didn't grow up camping, like you were saying, like they didn't have their parents growing up camping, didn't have their grandparents growing up camping because of, you know, like segregation and Jim Crow, these really awful exclusionary practices. There's not the same kind of nostalgia for the outdoors, and the outdoors were, they have a lot of context to being unsafe.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's just, you know, make it plain. Black people were lynched.
Right.
And trees are not, you know, necessarily like something to hug.
Right.
And so, you know, you got the lyrics of Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit that, you know, that paint that picture of a not too distant America where, you know, Black people were not safe in the woods. And there's, you know, land ownership, you know, loss of African-American families. And there's, you know, the reality that it was so terrorizing in certain places in the country that people would sometimes leave in the night and search of the warmth of those other suns, and found themselves in Chicago and New York and here in Oakland, to get away from all of that. And so it's not necessarily seen as progress when you talk about people who are trying to turn away from, you know, a terrorizing past. And so, but even with that, we still prevailed. Mm-hmm. We still had those beaches that may have been segregated, but there were beaches that we could go to and recreate in. There were still, you know, clubs, for instance, that people created to, and lodges that people created so that folks could still persist and do activities like skiing in community. There have been historic camps that have been going on for ages. So there's, even though we didn't have necessarily the public welcoming in those places in nature, we still persisted. And I think that overcoming testimony is something I want to, you know, also lift up, at the same time recognizing that there is much healing and atonement that has to occur for us to have our fullest sense of citizenship in this country. Mm-hmm. that embraces our outdoors all over.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as much as I want to say things have changed, you know, I live in the Sierra Nevada, which is a pretty white area. And I was working in Joshua Tree National Park, and that surrounding community is also a pretty white, scary area. So, you know, now that I'm up here in the Sierra Nevada, I don't feel as unsafe. But it's definitely, anytime I go hiking, I'm the only Black person on the trail. Anytime I go, you know, swim in the lake, I'm the only Black person swimming in the lake. And I don't necessarily feel unsafe because of the color of my skin, but I do feel, you know, people looking at me funny or just not expecting to see somebody like me doing these things. So I think there's still, you know, as you talk about, like, the whole point of Outdoor Afro is to make outdoor spaces more welcoming and create more leadership and just make that in just the public consciousness that yes, Black people belong in natural and do recreate and belong in natural spaces and do hike and do ski and do all of these things, and that they should feel welcome doing that.
Well, I think one of the reasons why, you know, our work has been effective is that we recognize that Black people like to be in community. And so we don't deny ourselves that in nature. So, for instance, you know, you can be doing that hike, you know, as part of the Outdoor Afro community with, you know, maybe 10 or 15 or 20 other people. And when people are able to go out with others, they it restores a sense of confidence that, okay, I can do this. I'm not the only one. I don't have to be the best at it. I don't have to have the most expensive gear, or I won't be judged because I don't have expensive gear. Mm-hmm. And so all of those things are so important to help people feel that confidence. And I do find, again, that people do recreate close to home. So when you get in areas like the Sierra or Joshua Tree or any remote wild, you know, if there are not that many Black people living around that place, then it's not a big surprise, you know, aha moment that we're not seeing Black people recreating those places. Going back to people's time and definition of leisure, you know, if you've never been to a place, you're not necessarily going to invest 8 hours round trip in a car to go someplace that, you know, you have no idea what the amenities are. And the parks have not done as good of a job as they could to let people know about all the assets that are available, like how many California state parks are there that people can visit, and how affordable it is and how beautiful it is. And so I just think we have, you know, kind of a moment today to do a better job of inviting people and letting people know what's available. So it's not just the insiders, you know, who know what day to call, you know, to reserve their favorite campsite. And also helping people to feel comfortable and represented in those places is equally important. So that has become another aspect of my work, is the field building and helping to elevate these opportunities for more people to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that I love about what you just said when you're talking about the Outdoor Afro leadership and finding community in people that are interested in being outside and not feeling judged for, say, like your gear, what you're talking about. Because to me, there's so much exclusivity that comes with quote unquote being outdoorsy. You know, like you have to have all of these outdoor gear, you know, like Patagonia, I call it Patagucci. Like it's just like it's so expensive to be outdoorsy in the traditional sense, which is like the white sense, you know, like how you see it being represented on social media and online everywhere. It's a blonde, thin white woman outdoors in all this fancy gear, and that's the image that we have of what it means to be outdoorsy. And like I love that Outdoor Afro is saying like, no, like, you know, that's fine, like that's one way to do it, but you know, there are other ways to be outdoorsy, and you don't have to have all that gear, and there are different ways to be outdoorsy, different colors of what that means. Like it
Yeah.
just I think that that is something that I struggle with a lot, you know, because I live in such a white area, and
Yeah.
you know, all the people up here that I know recreate and go backpacking and stuff, it feels very exclusive, especially like when I was living down south in Joshua Tree, you know, it was a climber culture, and climbing is
Yeah.
another thing that's really expensive and really white, you know. So like
Yeah.
you know, coalitions like Brothers of Climbing and like Flash Foxy just kind of changing the game on in the
Yeah.
climbing world. But just like I love so much that you wanted to create a space that was free of judgment, and I know so many people would and do respond to that.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's certainly so inspirational for me to see time and again like how people have found their people. Like I have found all the other only ones, you know, and when you put all the only ones together, we're actually quite numerous. And we come from so many different backgrounds and professions, and we have a variety of economic levels represented, age represented, and it's just a beautiful thing to see these leaders, you know, who are anywhere between, you know, 22 and over 60, be able to get their whole life in Outdoor Afro, and their own families' lives have been transformed in many cases. And, you know, I just, you know, I can't emphasize enough that, you know, the way that Black people choose to recreate, you know, is going to look different. And that's okay, you know, because dangling off the side of a mountain is not necessarily what some people might consider adventure. You know, Black people live with a lot of adrenaline already, right? So I think there's a luxury to be able to invite adrenaline into your life in a very deliberate, controlled way, you know, that certain hiking experience, definitely climbing and other human-powered sports deliver. And so for some people, they're like, you know, I've been, you know, dealing with the man all week, you know, and I want to just chill on the weekend. I don't want to even see people outside, you know, outside of my family. I mean, I know like I have a partner who works super hard on the week on during the week, and on the weekends he just wants to chill. And maybe he wants to do something outside, but it's going to be more around decompression, relaxing, you know, hanging out, you know, with friends, grilling, you know, maybe a leisurely hike, you know, and maybe every, you know, 4 months or so, something more adventurous in the outdoors. But, you know, on the weekends, you know, for people who are busy, who have, you know, lots of time constraints, anyway, and who are also trying to find a release from the strain of living in the United States as African Americans. You know, we have to, you know, get in the minds and hearts of what's really valuable to people. And so when someone comes up to me and they say that, oh, you know, 0.0001% of all visitors to Yosemite were Black, that's a problem. I'm like, well, it depends, you know, how you look at it. I mean, Yosemite is a really hard place to go to, even when you know what to do. And there are not that many Black people who live in that area, you know. And so we have to, you know, kind of deconstruct what we think the problem is, and really look at what people are already doing, and ask people what they want to be doing, as a starting place versus more black people need to hike. I don't know if I've signed up for that.
Yeah, I mean, basically doing anything while black is like such a struggle. You know, going to the grocery store while black, walking down the street while black, you know, going to a coffee shop with your friend while black, like literally doing anything while black. It's that pressure that's on black folks constantly, that fight or flight, like, am I going to get arrested? Is something bad going to happen to me? Am I going to get home safe? Is my kid going to get home safe? All the time, literally all the time in their daily lives,
Every
like
day.
every day. That's something that I really struggle explaining to my white friends. Like when I explain how it feels to be the only person of color working in my very white environmental field up here, and the only black person that I might see is like once a month in town. You know, it's just like and it's hard for me to explain like why that affects me so much and how aware I am, you know, when I walk into a meeting of, you know, 30 people, all dedicated to the environment, which is great. But I'm the only person of color. You know, like it's something that I recognize and I realize and I try to like move forward with my day. But, you know, I'm dealing with all these microaggressions outside of work and in work. And, you know, sometimes it wears on you. And as much as I am an quote unquote outdoorsy person, you know, sometimes it's just like, you know what? I need to stay inside. I don't want to deal with people today. I had a really hard week. And, you know, that is something that is absolutely valid. And I
That's
experience
real.
that. It's so real. And it's hard for me to explain that to white folks. Like, I don't know, like, how do we bridge that conversation? Because, or should we be trying to, you know, like as you were saying, like should we, like what is the solution? Should we be trying to get more black folks visiting national parks? Like what is the solution, and how do we explain to white folks that this is a real thing that we're experiencing, and we shouldn't be judged either way, like whether we choose to recreate outside or whether we don't. Like I don't know, like what is the solution there?
Well, I think that's a holy grail question that everybody's trying to solve for right now, because everyone's really clamoring for diversity and inclusion and equity in the outdoors. I mean, that's just a huge topic, and everybody wants to take a bite out of it. And for me, it change happens only at the speed of relationships. And we're not going to be able to deliver, you know, the 1, 2, 3 step solution to solve it in the absence of having relationships with people. And I think that's the thing we've been able to do with Outdoor Afro over the years, is to build a relationship that where people trust us. They know that when they get outside with us, what it's going to be. You know, we've got, you know, thousands and thousands of people who've recreated with us, and that investment in getting to know people, and to have leaders who are leading in their own towns and say, you know what, come with me to Yosemite. I've got this figured out. Let you know, you can't, that's not something that's easily duplicatable. And I think people, you know, they want to open the door and say, come on in, and they're surprised when no one shows up. But people will show up, I feel, if you get to know what their values are, and you get to know what, you know, what's important to them in real time. And, you know, for instance, we started doing healing hikes because of, you know, all of what had been happening and continues to happen with police-involved shootings, with, you know, just our bodies continuing to be harmed with impunity. And how do we manage our feelings and our trauma around that? And so Outdoor Afro stepped in to do healing hikes, to basically hold space in nature, in a landscape that can absorb, you know, all that we were feeling. And that's, you know, that's something African Americans have always done. We've always known we could lay down our burdens down by the riverside. Nature has always been there for us, to as a place of worship, as a place to grow our food, as a place for us to find retreat. And so, you know, we've just been more deliberate about that, but we arrive there by having a trusted network of partners and leaders and participants to be able to make that happen. You know, we couldn't just come out of the blue and say we're going to do a healing hike and expect that people were going to show up. That was able to happen because we have had the relationships and the credibility. And so I feel like if people want to do differently, you know, it may mean that they have to be something different, you know, because Outdoor Africa has never had a diversity problem. and it's certainly not ours to solve for others, because, you know, I feel like if people really want to have what they say they want to have, then they would do different mm-hmm. things. And some of those things require radical change mm-hmm. And rigorous honesty. And, you know, and if you're racist, then you got to deal with that. Like mm-hmm. that's your problem, you know, and no diversity consultant is going to be able to help you until you deal with that.
Right. And that shouldn't be the responsibility of Black and brown folks to fix racism, in my opinion. Like,
no,
that should be like their own community putting in the work for their own community. Like, white folks need to be helping their own their own communities with the problem of racism. Like, they need to be putting in the work. So, like, what is an example that you can think of where, like, white folks can put in the work to encourage more inclusivity and make folks feel safer and everything that we just discussed?
Yeah, well, support the work of Outdoor Afro and others like Outdoor Afro in a way that that doesn't necessarily center you, right? Like, I feel like people want to, like, help solve the problem and, like, be all in the middle, invisible in it. And so I think by supporting the good work that's happening around the country in whatever ways you can and that are desired, you know, like, for instance, we get calls like every day for people who want to partner with us, but it's usually them wanting to kind of push their own agenda. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's important to ask people for what they need. You know, don't assume that, you know, if it's a Black or brown affinity organization, that they're going to need your help to lead a trip or to lend some specific expertise, because what we find is that, you know, we can absolutely partner in a kind of an episodic way with like outfitters, for instance, but it's not necessarily about people inserting themselves in the middle of organizations that will make their support more effective. Mm-hmm. You know, donations are amazing, of course. Helping to spread the word, giving us the opportunity to tell our story, sharing power and privilege can be so helpful. So if you have a platform that you have because you've been given a platform through, you know, that's unearned, like through your job or through through wealth, through media, sharing that. And helping organizations like Outdoor Afro to tell our story can be a really powerful way to share, you know, share in the opportunity and help us to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I guess we talked a little bit about your background and growing up in outdoor spaces and feeling like the only one and wanting to find, you know, others that were the only ones, and which I think is really beautiful. I guess my just on a very simple level, like in your own words, like, why is diversity and inclusion in the outdoors so important and so necessary?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, like with any environment that's diverse, like we think about nature, for instance, you know, if you have only one kind of tree or growing one kind of vegetable, you know, that's not a strong and resilient situation. More vulnerable to disease, more vulnerable to pests and other threats. And so, like in nature, you know, when you have diversity, you're actually stronger. You're actually, you know, more resilient to things that might cause harm. It increases the likelihood of a symbiotic relationship. It's just healthier for our humanity to live in a way that sustains us through our relationships and understanding of other people mm-hmm. who don't necessarily look like us. And it's not, you know, it's not a color by numbers thing. You know, I really am shooting for organic connections as mm-hmm. much as possible. You know, I don't take to, you know, being thrown in a sandbox with someone who doesn't look like me and be told to play, mm-hmm. you know, I think that doesn't serve the purpose. What you really want in the end is for people to really have a deeper appreciation and understanding and a real relationship. Mm-hmm. And again, I can't emphasize enough that kind of change only happens at the speed of relationships. Yeah. And we've got to be willing to be bold and to link arms with people and be in it for the long haul. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen, you know, from one transactional event. Right. You know, it's going to be a series of levers and pulleys and PR and policy and everyday folks, you know, who are going to help bring about this change.
Yeah. And I just think I want to see more Black folks in the outdoor. I mean, on like a really selfish level, like I want to see more Black people out in the outdoors. Like I want to see more people that look like me in the outdoors. But like, it's a lot to ask for Black, you know what I mean? Like if you just having a Black body and putting your body in these spaces is, it's kind of like a political statement. It's been so ingrained that Black people don't belong in these spaces. I guess that's my problem with like the way a lot of like organizations like national parks and, you know, just trying to get those numbers in. It's like you're trying to encourage Black folks and brown folks to come to your park because you know you have a huge diversity problem. And when you're asking that, though, you're not like facilitating that relationship. Like you were saying, like with Outdoor Afro, you're building relationships. You're trying to make people feel comfortable. Like I can help you. I can, you know, like hold your hand through this process and make you feel welcome so that you can do that to the next person, to the next person, to the next person, and like create that whole chain of leadership.
That's right.
Just like, I just feel like there are so many organizations that I see that are just like, yeah, like, you know, like we need the nut, you know what I mean? It's just, it's hard. It's hard. It's a hard thing to ask. It's a hard thing to expect. And it's a hard thing to expect to happen quickly, like you were saying, like at the speed of relationships. So like, what is something that organizations like National Park Service or other big government or nonprofit agencies, like what is something that they're not doing that they should be doing to be building those relationships and gaining that the trust of the Black community?
They have to show up where we are, you know. You know who's getting it right? Coca-Cola's getting it right. Mm. McDonald's is getting it right. You know, like I grew up, you know, watching Black shows and there were Black commercials with those brands, you know, peddling their wares to right where they knew we were going to be, whether it be watching Soul Train on a Saturday morning or, you know, the Cosby Show, you know. So, you know, we have to go to where people are. And I think that nature and the outdoors has a PR problem. A lot of the people who are in positions of leadership, they're not, you know, they're not business people necessarily. They're not marketing people necessarily. Mm-hmm. And they're more inclined to be education focused folks, you know, people who know interpretation, they know about wildlife, you know, and forest management, but they're not necessarily people who, you know, are able to, who are outside of that field doing other things. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that helped us. My background professionally was, you know, I worked at Morgan Stanley as an analyst. Then I opened a game store with my my ex-husband, and so I had a lot of experience with being in business. And so I feel like you know, the environmental field needs to think about its business and take a page from the companies and organizations that are getting it right. Disneyland is getting it right. Cruise ships are getting it right. And when you talk about those types of experiences, money's not an issue. There's tons of people in those experiences who are spending top dollar to go and be a part of those experiences on their leisure time. Why? Because, you know, cruise ships and you know, the whole, you know, Disney platform, they do a pretty good job of keeping their brands in front of people exactly at the places where people are, mm-hmm. and are committed to doing it over time. You know, we may not think that those are great brands or great experiences personally. Your listeners might not, you know, but they don't have a diversity problem mm-hmm. either. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, we've got to really think more expansively about our work and not assume that because we love the outdoors and we think nature is cool, that other people naturally will think the same thing, right? Because we just have not done in this field a decent enough job to make it a part of people's everyday lives and make it appealing.
Being socially conscious is like trendy now, you know?
Yeah.
And so I guess like having those inclusive commercials or whatever is better than nothing, but I'm also a little bit suspicious, you know, like when I see something that a certain kind of outdoorsy type brand is putting out, like a new campaign that they're putting out, and yeah. It features, you know, like if it features women or it features minorities, you know, I'm just like, well, are you only doing that because you understand that, you know, you've been excluding a huge part of your market for a very long time and people are calling you out on it? Or is it because you actually want to, you know, like, are you actually doing it because you want to be inclusive
yeah.
and want more people to wear your merchandise? I'm really suspicious of that. Like, I just want more companies, or I guess to see more like authentically that relationship being done, you know, like you're talking about showing up, like, yeah, I want more of those organizations and, you know, like, I just want them to show up. I want them to prove that they're not just in it for the campaign, for the hashtag,
yeah.
for the marketing,
yeah.
for the promo. Like, I want them to actually put in the work, like, and invite people that are like you, like yourself, like being advocates for Outdoor Afro and being advocates for Black folks. And it's just like, I don't know what the solution is.
Well, I'll tell you a few things on that front. I think, you know, your question about authenticity, you know, when you see the representation, is it coming from a solid place or not? I think it's absolutely coming from a market-driven motivation. I mean, they're in the business to sell stuff. Okay, that's just the way what it is. However, there are companies now and who have been at this for a long time who see the imperative and live the imperative of diversity, starting with their own staff and their company.
Mm-hmm.
So REI is one that I can absolutely say, and they've been a partner of Outdoor Afros from the beginning. They have absolutely made internal commitments. They hired a chief of diversity and inclusion who has done some pretty pioneering stuff on the inside of the organization, in addition to supporting organizations like mine, and have helped give us a platform to make our work more visible and open the door for us to have other partners as well in the outdoor retail space. And I'm also on the Outdoor Industry Association Board of Directors and can tell you that, you know, brands are getting this big aha moment. They're mm-hmm. like, if we want to stay in business, you know, we have to look more like America. And I think all of these organizations, brands, everyone's having a similar, you know, a similar awareness that America is changing. It doesn't look like it did 50 years ago, and 50 years from now, it's going to be more brown. And unless these brands and nonprofit organizations and other environmental related platforms shift to look like America, then they're not going to be around. So I think that there's a little bit of both. There's a little bit of the altruism, but there's also the market reality that people are facing and are trying to do something about it so they can stay viable. But I think that there are, like I said, there are some brands who, all the brands that we work with are ones that we feel not only do good business, but are just they've got good people working there. And it's really important for us that we don't just partner with anyone, but we partner with people so that we can have a relationship, not just, like you said, not just a hashtag or logo, but I really want to know what's under the hood in companies and feel good that I can share those companies with others with the confidence that they're doing the right thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like we've had a great conversation, and I've definitely learned a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot about Outdoor Afro and can find more information about it. And I guess we didn't touch on this actually. Like, how does somebody go about becoming involved in the Outdoor Afro Leadership Program?
Yeah, well, we will just go to outdooraphro.com, and we've got a bunch of links and blogs and other resources to help you get started. If it's, just finding your local network and joining your local network, that's a good start because we want people to get familiarized with the community before taking on leadership right away. We want people, to follow us, of course, on all of our social media. So we're Outdoor Afro across all the platforms. And that is another way to get to know who we are, and then that can help inform you about how you want to get involved as maybe a partner, as a donor, as someone who wants to participate on trips, or even become an Outdoor Afro volunteer leader. Again, it goes back to relationships, and we're providing, hopefully a lot of content out there to help you get to know us and help you figure out how you want to be involved. And we welcome everyone to participate with Outdoor Afro. We're, clearly a focused community, but not a separating or exclusive community. I love to say that you don't have to have an Afro to be a part of Outdoor Afro. Because this work at the end of the day is a love story, and the vibe is always great with Outdoor Afro, and we want you to join us.
Awesome. Amazing. Thank you so much, Rue, for this
Thank you.
interview. I had such a great time talking to you and learned a lot. And
Thank you for having me.
yeah, it is a little bit for me, just kind of like I was just feeling just a little bit starstruck because you are somebody that I definitely admire, and as a fellow Black woman and just
Aww.
an environmental advocate and social justice advocate, like you are doing amazing work. And thank you so much for everything that you've done so far for our community and beyond.
Well, thank you. It's truly my pleasure, and I hope we can find a way to stay in touch.
Absolutely. So that was my interview with Rue Mapp, founder and CEO of Outdoor Afro. If you'd like to learn more information about Outdoor Afro and support the awesome and necessary work that Rue and her colleagues are doing, go to outdooraphro.com. You can also find them on Twitter and Instagram at outdooraphro. All of the resources described can be found in the show notes page for this episode, which you can find at wildlensinc.org/EOC160. If you enjoyed this episode of the show, please rate, review, and subscribe to the EOC podcast on iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice. Our theme music is by The Humidors.
And please remember that we are undergoing a name change at the Eyes on Conservation as we rebrand and reconstitute ourselves as an organization and as a podcast. And we want to know what you think about that. So definitely listen to the last episode, the Roundtable on Social Justice and Conservation, and email us your thoughts, info@wildlensinc.org. We might even use those comments on an upcoming episode. Please reach out. Thanks for all your time and for taking this journey with us.